You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Hey, Matt Frank.
Yes, Chris.
I have a question for you that maybe you specifically can answer. What kind of beer do, you know, the giant monsters, the kaiju, drink?
I don't know, because, you know, beer is really sort of a human construct, and kaiju are sort of supposed to be, I mean, thematically, they're supposed to be above humanity
and human vices.
And all that. There's not really any evidence to
support. No, let me stop you right there.
All right, fine.
What kind of beer do people who like kaiju and giant monsters drink?
Oh, Circle Brewery.
Circle Brewery.
That stuff's great.
So you too.
Sure, hell yeah.
Oh, it's right here in Austin, Texas. Circle Brewery, they have their brew pub. You can go check out all their beers right there, and they are the official sponsor for OneOfUs.net.
Hell yeah.
You're drinking a...
The Hefeweizen is pretty good.
Yeah, the Circle Blur. It's my favorite, too.
Yeah, I actually just like... I don't even like beer, and I like these guys. It's nice. It's a nice flavor to it. It's good stuff.
Check out Circle Brewing, the official sponsor for OneOfUs.net, and come visit them at their brew pub in Austin, Texas. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. So this story is about a discarded robot head, once powerful, but now, all these years later, left looking for something to do. But fortunately, that little robot head, Tony Guerrero, shows up in this film. The co-host 3000, folks, back from Spill.com, appears in Alita Battle Angel. You heard it here, probably 15th.
And now we're going to have to pretend like we didn't hate the movie because Tony's in it, and this is going to control his career.
Yeah, he's standing behind me right now with a gun to my head.
Don't tell me about your ratings.
No, Alita Battle Angel, which I'm curious actually about this because I'm sure it's nothing to do with this, but it made me think of it. The way in Japan and in America, we reverse the names, like Takashi Miike in Japan is actually Miike Takashi. And I couldn't help but think of that when I was like, because the graphic novel is called Battle Angel Alita. This is Alita
it was an
Battle
odd
Angel.
Choice. Well, yeah, because it's like Alita colon Battle Angel.
Come on, why are you so obsessed with her ass?
Gross. Harris.
Just kidding. It's just metal. Come on. Well, Harris has got nothing to say.
We're off the rails here.
He does not have a response. He's trying to think of a safe internet response for Dr. Nerdlove on this one.
Yeah, the only thing I can think is bounce a nickel off of it. It's made out of nickel. I don't know.
It's some nickel alloy, I guess.
That works.
But joining me on this review, of course, is...
Matt.
Harris.
JC.
And I was actually... As much as I was kind of both simultaneously dreading and looking forward to this film, I think. Dreading because I don't think Robert Rodriguez has made a movie that's worth watching since Sin City, the first one, mind you.
Oof.
And even that didn't age terribly well.
No. That one's got Frank Miller dripped all over it.
Yeah. And Cameron, who were like, okay, so he's executive producing this, but how executive produced?
Apparently pretty... He wrote the script.
I mean, this was, as I understand it, it was his... This was really his baby. Like, he's been wanting to make this.
Oh, he's wanted to make this since the 90s.
Which I think it was just kind of one of those, like, we have no idea how we could do this and make it convincing yet. The effects aren't there yet. And also the budget for set effects aren't there yet. But I think that the one thing that we all do agree on after coming out of this is, hey, the effects are there.
Yeah.
They are there now.
There were a few little, there were some small moments where I was kind of, but for the most part, I thought it was actually pretty damn good.
You will believe a girl could have freakishly huge eyes.
Well, that's I don't know if I agree on that. You know, but,
Rosa Salazar plays, which is to say, like, she acted and was mocapped over and then was given a CG skin and very big CG eyes for this movie as Alita, the titular cyborg who is found in the trash by Dr. Dyson Ido, played by Christoph Waltz, who managed to avoid most of his, like, vocal mannerisms in this film. I was kind of surprised because he has such a distinctive style of talking.
He's got this very crisp diction that comes from someone who doesn't speak English as his first language.
Yeah, but he didn't. It's the first movie I've ever seen him in that you couldn't help but it didn't smack you in the face, which I don't mind that. I mean, it's not a criticism.
It makes me wonder if he's worked at it to kind of get that out of his system, which is commendable.
Yeah, but he takes her back and rebuilds her, and she can't remember anything. She can't remember anything of her previous life. She's discovering life as if, like, all she knows is how to speak English and how basic body functions.
She is immediately, though, as like, tempestuous as a normal teenage girl.
Yeah. He's like, sure. At one point he says, well, you've got a totally normal brain of a teenage girl, as much as a teenage girl's brain.
If that is something that even exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she, one of the things that a lot of people, including me, pointed out at the trailers for this is, I can't get past how weird looking she is with the big eyes. And honestly, 5 minutes into this movie, I just kind of forgot about it.
They did dial it back from the original trailer.
I think they toned it down some.
It's so funny because I had a feeling this was going to be a point of conversation because, you know, I'm sure some people are going to get used to it as they watch it. I never got used to it. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like for the most part, her CGI was really good. Mm-hmm. It was very convincing in, like, her being, you know, cybernetic and everything and having this body that does, like, all these crazy kung fu moves and stuff. But, yeah, I couldn't get over the eyes. They were always distracting.
And especially huge when she fought.
It's odd because at first you're like, oh, yeah, you're just a cyborg. This town is lousy with cyborgs. There's cyborgs all over the goddamn place with human faces, although, like, most of them are just the actor's faces mapped directly onto, like, a CG robot body that do not have giant eyes. So I kept asking myself, is no one else here curious what's going on with the whole eyes thing? I guess it's just because there's such a wide variety of different looking cyborgs out here. People are like, oh, I don't know. And eventually, I guess that's explained to some degree by the plot. But even so, if that was the case and that's the thing people know about, how come people weren't like, holy shit, what the fuck?
What is going? It honestly stunk to me a little bit of, I'm trying to think of the exact words to express what I'm thinking here, but it almost felt as though they couldn't just let the actress play on the strength of her performance. They had to make it almost like a freak show.
They had, like, to make her especially Animu.
Yeah,
which is a bummer to me because Rosa Salazar is really talented. I've seen her in other things. I'm glad that this is like a breakout role for her, but it's kind of a bummer that nobody probably still will know what she looks like after seeing this movie.
She actually does have pretty huge eyes in real life, for the record.
Yeah, I mean, if you wanted to make them a small percentage, but you're like, okay, like for example, if you're looking at a cutscene for like a Final Fantasy game, one of the more recent ones, and everybody's a little more realistically proportioned, but they still got those anime doe eyes. They still look okay. Like, they're big, but they're not super big. This felt like comically big. Like, the way an American who's trying to draw anime would draw anime.
I didn't come here to be attacked like this. You know what you
like did. The way Anya Taylor-Joy's eyes are too far apart.
Yeah. Well, it's like, they could have just used Anya Taylor-Joy and no one would have said, oh, look, her eyes are
If they wanted to get someone with anime eyes and make it look realistic, they really could have just gotten Anne Hathaway and cut out the middle.
Right, exactly. CGI her head onto a robot body.
I guess that's why it kind of weirded me out, because I was like, I feel like that would have been a little more organic if more of the other cyborgs, if that was a normal thing that you're like, oh, that's a thing with cyborgs, I mean, and they've got,
they're
kind
of trying to make her stand out because she's supposed to be a special cyborg, but it doesn't come up enough that she's unusual, except, you know, for her backstory.
Yeah, I mean, she's like, you know, 80% metal. And that doesn't stop local Latino hottie Hugo from going, what's up?
How you doing?
Talking about a hard body.
It is weird. That,
like, they make that joke.
I know.
They come up with different, like kind of physical slurs for her. Like, they call her hard body or, like, little flea. Nobody thinks to, like, be like, hey, big eyes.
Which is kind of amusing because in the comics, there's constant jokes about characters are constantly calling her octopus lips because she's supposed to have these, like, big pouty lips.
Well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, I did eventually, like, I was so, after a certain point, I was so just, I got enough into the story that I sort of was able to move past it, and it didn't actively bother me. I still don't personally agree with it as a choice
Fair enough.
You know,
I think they could have done without it, but like I said, after a while, I just stopped thinking about it. It didn't stop the movie dead in its tracks for me. But speaking of the story, let's go back to that.
Yeah.
This is in the year 25, way in the future.
The 26th century, because the its opening titles tell you that.
There you go.
26th century fucks.
And it says 300 years after the fall. Apparently, there was a great war between people on Mars and people on Earth, where there are all these floating cities on Earth, and all but one, the one that's above the city that this story takes place in, have fallen. And, you know, much like Elysium, that's where the rich people live up in the city, and the down people down below really don't know much of what is actually going on up there. All we really know for a while is that, oh, there's a bad guy up there who seems to be kind of like messing with stuff a little bit, and he can do that by it seems like a lot of people have like chips in their head, and he can kind of take their bodies over briefly.
Yeah.
Most notably here with the bad guy we actually do see a lot of in here, Marshal Ali, is Vector, who is a scummy capitalist who rigs the cyborg rollerball matches, motorball.
He's basically a gangster that just happens to have like official government imprint here. So he's a crime lord, but he works for the factory, which is the name of basically the system that Scrapyard or Iron City runs on, and their purpose is to feed Zalem, the floating city.
And Alita starts figuring out over time, especially after she gets in her first situation where she ends up having to defend her dear Dr. Ido against a series of cyborgs that he himself was out hunting for.
Whoa, there's a plot twist!
Yeah.
with this comically large
Rocket hammer.
Yeah. I was looking at that and I immediately thought, that's from the manga, and he looks like a fucking idiot walking around with that.
I'm not really sure I could see Christoph Waltz like wielding that thing, or much less picking it up off the ground.
Yeah, it was silly.
There does come a point where you kind of have to assume that he's a badass, because otherwise he would have gotten fucking murdered for trying to hit someone with that thing.
I was going to say, even when he's using it, it's like it feels like they didn't even swap him out for a stunt actor or anything. It's just Christoph Waltz going, got him! Got him!
It's not the best decision made in the movie, but during that, she defends him and finds out, hey, look, I'm kind of a badass.
I'm kung fu.
Exactly. It's kind of at that moment, whoa, I'm good at this. As she single-handedly takes down a group of, like, really nasty cyborg hunter-killer types.
Yeah.
And she starts exploring more about that and more about trying to figure out more about her past. Because during that experience, she has a flashback to her as some sort of mega soldier badass from question mark.
She was a Halo.
her best friend was Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah, her best friend was Michelle Rodriguez.
Of course.
That looked more like a CG Maisie Williams. I don't know what that was about.
I was going to say.
Yeah, the one problem with the flashbacks is they all look like they were taking place in the verse from Ready Player One.
Yeah, they
yeah, those were. I mean, one thing I really wish that Morgan was here, though, because
that's why I gave you a plus one on your thing.
I know she just she wasn't able to make it out this time, but I'm going to take her to go see this because I know she'd probably like it because she's read some of the manga, I think, and also it says how many times I've watched her do this routine that I recognized those kung fu moves that Alita was doing in front of the mirror. I was like, oh shit, that's a fucking thing that Morgan does like 10,000 times. And I'm like, oh man, I'm not going to tell her about it. And that's why I'm not going to make sure she doesn't listen to this.
But no, that's future cyborg kung fu.
Is it?
Yes,
is it really?
Kunst.
Yes, of course you do. Harris is the resident, huge, huge fan of the original graphic novel, so expect on him to correct us when we're wrong about something.
Yes.
There's a lot of other characters appearing in this. Jennifer Connelly plays Dr. Ito's ex-wife, who'd had a daughter with, but now they're separated, and she works for Mahershala Ali as a robot cyborg.
Yeah, she's a cyborg surgeon, just like Ito is.
Yeah.
Except she's kind of gone to the dark side, because she wants to go back.
Yeah.
Ed Skrein plays a kind of a second tier level baddie who's a cyborg hunter killer who basically gets pissed off of Alita and is like, okay, I'm gonna fuck her up. But bad call, brother. The moment you're like, I have this sword and it's so badass and look at it. And she's like, you're like, she's going, it's just a matter of time before that's mine, dude. You realize that, right?
Loved that scene when she's... Okay, I kind of loved and hated the scene where she's in the bar basically calling everybody out. But at the same time, I was cringing because she's giving this weird heroic speech about this character that we're going to go fight this guy. And I'm like, I can't tell if she's trolling us, trolling them, or if this is actually legitimate. But... it kept flip-flopping to these parts that I really loved, which is where people are all getting up in her face, like, what's his name?
Candice Green playing Zapan.
Zapan is all getting up in her face and stuff, and it just, I love her acting in that scene because she's just like just giving this big shit-eating grin because she's, I'm going to make you eat your own colon.
She's like, oh, you're so pretty. This is all you spend all your money on. You don't actually fight people because it might fuck up your hair.
Well, I love that, like, love he's that. Like, oh, bitch, what? And, like, she just takes him down in, like, a... 2 seconds.
Kicks the shit out of him and everybody else. And
everybody
I was
else
like,
in the bar is like,
yay!
Well, part of what I kind of find amusing about that is the speech she's giving. She's like making me like, the Hunter Warrior is such a brotherhood. It's like, you've been a part of this for 2 seconds.
Literally, yeah.
Men of the West!
It felt like maybe that storyline was going to develop into something that actually would be kind of a cool Japanese, like Seven Samurai type
scenario.
Well,
she's giving such a fucking Genki spirit, like, you know, rousing speech. And literally everyone in the bar is like, oh, are you fucking kidding me?
It was really kind of awkward. And again, I couldn't tell if it was supposed to be awkward.
Interrupted by another famous face in this movie, although, God help me, I didn't recognize him
at all. Until we started talking.
Even then, Jackie Earle Haley plays this ridiculously huge cyborg who
I was going to go with Jeff Fahey.
Who keeps getting broken apart and then get upgraded, who's constantly after Alita. And then Jeff Fahey has a small but really likable part as like a cyborg cowboy with cyborg dogs that
just, I loved him.
He's like cyborg.
That has one of the dumber but funnier lines in the movie. He's like, I don't like him. He didn't like dogs.
Yeah, he wasn't a dog lover.
He wasn't a dog lover.
That.
I don't like it. I turned to Harris. I'm like, that's Brian Salisbury as a cyborg.
That was a funny moment for like Austin moviegoers where it's like the Robert Rodriguez staple. It's like as soon as Jeff Fahey showed up, I was like, oh, of course he's in this fucking movie.
Of course.
Why wouldn't he be?
You know, one thing that weirded me out, there's a character who's on screen a lot here, but I don't think had any dialogue, which is Ito's assistant, played by Idara Vitch.
She had like a couple of lines.
She had some.
But most of the movie, she's just kind of standing there looking at shit.
I noticed that was a little weird. She didn't say much, and it's like, man, there could have been a whole dynamic there, and they... Well, I mean, this movie's already stuffed to the fucking brim.
Which is part of the problem with it, because they tried... So, I guess this is where I start earning my paycheck for this. like we get paid.
Everybody belt in, folks. This could take a while.
So, I am impressed in as much as this hews surprisingly closely to the manga. They made some adaptation changes, like Shirin, Doc Ito in the books never had a daughter. He never had a relationship with Shirin. He's not
Jennifer Connelly's character.
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly's character. They weren't married. That was just added for, I guess, pathos or something. But for the most part, they really capture a lot of the books. Which is kind of a problem because they've tried to do both Volume 1 and Volume 2 of the graphic novel at the same time. And then they do the thing that I really hate that movies have been doing for the last 10, 15 years of setting up the sequel in the middle of the first movie.
Right.
Because they bring in a character who doesn't show up until like Book 3 or Book 4 and establish very quickly as like, oh, hey, here's the boss level character.
Yeah.
I hope you like him because he's not coming back.
He's played at the very, finally we see the very, very end of the movie and they don't even list him on Wikipedia. I guess they're trying to keep it secret, but by a big name actor who I suspect will not return for the sequel if there is one. But it smacks so heavily of YA novel adaptations lately, where it's like they all have to end on this cliffhanger thing.
That's what I was going to say. Like, being somebody who didn't even know up until you guys were talking about it that it was based on an existing set of graphic novels. I even had questions for you guys. I was like, why are some people cyborgs and some people not? Like, the movie just completely glosses over all of that fact. And so this movie gives you a ton of information without backstory to everything. But, I mean, it did its job in that I'm interested enough in this story to kind of I mean, it may fall the same fate as Avatar and like never get a sequel, or like if it will, it's gonna be fucking years from now.
Yeah,
and so like
seven, 8 years.
And so like I'm interested in this world and this story, and yeah, who knows if I'll ever get any of these questions answered.
And that's
so,
the thing is, Cameron is famously very good at world building, and I feel like the world building and of course the quality of the special effects and the action here are really at top level. I was
surprised at how much production value went into this.
Oh, this is a visual feast.
Yeah, it's lovely. It's just all the details. Your eyes are constantly darting around the screen. You want to see more of this.
The 3D was good.
Yeah, the 3D wasn't bad at all for it.
I forgot we were watching a 3D movie, but then I would realize I was watching a 3D movie. My eye would start fucking up because those glasses are all weird. But anyway.
I always, about a half hour into a 3D movie, somehow my brain just acclimatizes and I forget them. I don't even really get the 3D effect anymore. But at first it was cool.
But I do want to say,
you were saying about the cyborgs everywhere and things. I think in some way it kind of self-explains that, where it's like, look, this life sucks in this city and people get hurt and like what would be dead today a lot. So there's a huge market for replacing every body part with cyborg parts of varying levels of quality, which is like, okay. So like there are some people out there who don't have that, but we even see one of the main characters, his whole thing is like going and knocking out people with cyborg parts and like cutting their limbs off them for sale on the black market.
It's basically like taking the tires off of a car on the street, except it's a person.
Yeah. The car is sitting there screaming, don't take my tires.
Yeah, that, very different effect. But ultimately, I feel like where this movie kind of falls apart a bit, and to say, I still did very much enjoy this movie, which is saying something alone for a Robert Rodriguez film, is that the dialogue, once again, is really all at a YA level. It's not very good. I will say I did kind of like the way they used the excuse of the fact that everyone understands that Alita doesn't really remember anything or know anything about this world as an excuse for the expository sequences to explain things. So there's lots of people going, oh, well, here's what that is, because she honestly doesn't know and is trying to learn about this world.
That at least is a lot less clunky than, as you know, Bob.
Yeah, it's true. It at least makes sense. But even so, there's some stuff with the love story in here, which is really, like I said, low. Really about as bad as it gets with YA-type material. And it doesn't help that the guy who plays Hugo isn't a terribly great actor.
Not really.
I mean, he's
got a cool jacket.
I almost felt like the whole thing with Hugo, again, it was sort of like the bar scene. There were little parts where I was like, oh, that's really nice, or oh, I really like that, or the big... Actually, I thought the whole kiss scene, I actually thought that was kind of sweet and kind of well shot and had good... It was nice. But, again, then it goes to, like, this kind of eye-rolly, like, oh, really? Like, this seems like it moved kind of fast. And that's one of the things I appreciate about a lot of other recent films, where they're like, no, these kids aren't falling in love after 2 days. Like, you know, I mean... was one thing I really appreciate about Bumblebee. They even there was a little teen romance in that they were like, oh no, we're not getting too far into that. They're kids. So that to me, I was a little eye rolly at a few points. But
yeah, I mean, it doesn't spend too much time, but almost every scene that it is devoting to it is pretty bad. See, she literally pulls her heart out of her chest.
That was weird.
We talked about that. That was fucking weird.
That was weird on multiple.
Okay, I understand why they did that because
it sets up something later.
Yeah, so it sets things up later. But it's just like that is the most clunky part of the entire movie, and there is just no way to deliver that dialogue without making it sound really awkward and forced.
Yeah.
Anytime there was too much dialogue that wasn't being delivered by either Mahershala Ali, Christoph Waltz, or
Jennifer Connelly,
it was most of it was bad.
Yeah,
like, Mahershala Ali, I think, was criminally underused in this.
He's
good when he's in it, for sure, and there's a sequence where, like, towards the end where he's kind of like has his oh fuck face on, that's like like kind of made us laugh really hard. It's like that sort of like fuck.
there's a point in this, and I don't want to say exactly what happens because it's a major spoiler, but he has this great acting moment that is just had the entire like theater just kind of laughing because of how good it was.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, no. All I was going to say was that just on top of all that, I was really, I really appreciated how, based on everything we've all been talking about, and again, I haven't read, I haven't read the original manga, but I really appreciated that this did feel like a pretty rock solid marriage of Western storytelling tropes, kind of married to the tone and style of the original story based on what I know about Japanese storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated they didn't pull any punches in a couple of sequences too, where I was like, oh wow, they actually fucking did that. Okay. Well, fuck me then, I guess. Like, fuck your feelings, kids. I mean, there's a, and then there's a turn with this, the fate of a particular character. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but I was just like, oh, no, 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 no. Oh, oh, we're just going to leave that. Oh, we're not even going to address that. Okay, cool. Thank you for the nightmare fuel. And, but you know, I just appreciated that they went there with it.
Yeah, they do not skimp on the, oh, oh, you feeling good right now? Let's fix that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. This is an 80s manga. It's from the 80s, right?
Yeah.
90s,
there's,
but...
Okay. Yeah, there's one particular thing that movies have kind of shied away from because audiences have made very clear they hate it. And, yeah, they do it anyway.
Yeah. So you gotta make her really mad.
Woo, baby, and she gets mad.
Oh, yeah, no. And one thing I was really, really impressed by, because we were talking about, like, first of all the fight scenes for, like, when we did the trailer for Breakfast Pub, it was just like, the fight scenes look so fucking stilted. I really hope they fix this. Oh, goddamn, did they fix this?
They fixed it.
Action scenes in this are amazing.
They look so good, and they're just, they're move your head from side to side as you're watching them fun. And it could have been really clunky, like in a Michael Bay sense, because there's all these people with giant metal suits fighting each other
at incredible speeds. But you can tell who's doing what and how?
But you can totally tell and follow the path of the fight as it goes. It's extremely well done, and it feels like one of those moments. Cameron went to Rodriguez and said, I'm going to let my AD guy do these scenes.
It's either that happened.
Not great at these.
Yeah, it's either that happened or, like, I'm baffled that this is a Robert Rodriguez movie. Because, like, especially a project this big, I don't see how that producer and James Cameron, of all people, like, walk up to him. Because, I mean, we live here in Austin. We talk to people who make movies with Robert Rodriguez or on his sets. And he's very lazy. There's rumors that he plays video games while he's on set. And it's like, how does he get this project?
I suspect that he got the project because he's the lowest paid item in the line.
He's got to be, yeah.
But I suspect, yeah, there are some fight scenes in this. I think that, like, I kind of suspect that Cameron's like, move.
Yeah, I got this.
I got this one.
Because it does have that level of expertise of mapping out an incredibly complicated blocked fight scene between cyborgs who have multiple, like, flying parts and weapons and stuff at super high speeds. And like I said, you can follow everything that's going on the whole time.
And the other thing that I really loved about this is that they capture the look of all of the characters. Like, the casting is so dead on perfect, it's kind of unbelievable. Christoph Waltz, if you compare him to the manga, the only reason why he will look any different is because the Yukito Kishiro, the manga author, exaggerates human figures a bit. So if you take away the stylistic exaggeration, all the casting is perfect.
I mean, sorry, I didn't mean.
Oh, and there's, like, they get all the little details right, like the fact that Zapan in the comic, it's a lot more noticeable, so it's a little more realistic in the movie. But he's got the fucking Blue Oyster Cult tattoo, like, scrawled in a scar on his forehead.
Prog Rock was, like, 600 years old at this point.
I was going to say, they had Bush Cult had a big revival in the 25th century.
Like, he's like, don't feel the Reaper. Baby, I am the Reaper. Also, yeah. The fact that he had the Mayan calendar on his back was kind of badass.
I really loved that because I'm like, I saw that. I'm like, oh, you're a douchebag. Okay.
Right. It was the equivalent of a really huge tattoo of something like that on a white guy.
Yes. a British white guy.
Yeah, you're like,
and
oh,
correct me if I'm wrong, but based on a little bit of information I know and based on the casting of this film, the manga, like, it's not really, the characters aren't really not a whole lot of the characters in the manga are coded Japanese. It's a fairly international.
Yeah,
cast.
they're all over the place,
right?
And like even allowing for like the manga, everybody looked Japanese to us thing. Like, no, it's very international. You've got characters who are obviously like Senegalese, or you got characters who are obviously American, who are obviously, you know, various other races.
Right, and I just thought that was interesting because you know, it's a conversation that comes up a lot when people adapt to Japanese properties about, you know, the whole whitewashing argument, and it was just nice that they picked something that they could be like, oh, we have this nice egalitarian casting here, yeah. And there's a lot of anime and manga like that, you know, Full Metal Alchemist is like that, Attack on Titan is like that, which is ironic because when Attack on Titan had its live action remake in its live action version in Japan, they cast everybody as Japanese because that's what you do, and all these Americans were like, "What? How could they do that?" That's my anime fan impression.
Yeah, and that, hey, how you like it? How's that feel, bitch? But the only character you can really say that you can kind of make an argument that got whitewashed is Ito, because in the comics he's Daisuke Ito. And then this, he's Dyson Ito. But you know what? That's kind of a minor thing.
I mean, it would have just been Ken Watanabe again anyway.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in the future, like, nationality almost doesn't exist.
But, sure. You know, to some degree, it is weird that there, of all the nationalities represented, only characters who get one, maybe two lines are actually played by Asian actors in this film. Mm-hmm, I felt like, as much as I love Jennifer Connelly, I feel like this would have been a Michelle Yao role. I was like, that would have been perfect for an actress at that caliber here.
It's
I was like,
bad.
You know? Yeah. Just saying, it felt like that was a missed opportunity to throw in a primary character with an Asian actress.
Now, the one thing I will say that kind of annoyed me, other than how much they stuffed this movie, which is its own rant, and I can get to that in a second, was that they do the thing that happens so often where we're supposed to believe that this is a, you know, hellish post-apocalyptic world. Because things are kind of slightly dirty and are not nearly as shiny as they are up on the surface, whereas, like, you know what? No, you look like you live in Los Feliz, kid. I don't know why you're complaining.
All things considered,
actually,
it's not
kind
that
of
bad.
Nice.
Yeah, it seems like people are happy. People are playing. Yeah.
No one's starving.
People are
like,
playing.
The buildings are kind of cool.
People are playing guitars with three arms on the street. That shit is cool.
And it's like I could be a cyborg. Like my knee kind of hurts. I could just be a cyborg.
There you
That's
go.
Cool. I'm gonna
I mean,
do that.
Thing, like,
I'm
ready. Part of what I like is it's very clear that this is taking like. Iron City is actually somewhere in, like, Mexico or South America.
Right.
Which adds some interesting flavor to it, which is not in the manga.
It is a little odd to think that many hundreds of years from now, though. Like, pretty much everyone for clothes is just wearing the same clothes people wear today. It's, like, very ordinary. You can buy everything in here at Target right now. That was, like, there was nothing that was like, oh, that's a hack that came in fashion in the 24th century. No, there's none of that.
Except for the whole, like, you know, all right, everybody's going to be, like, the fancy people are going to be wearing suit jackets that don't have lapels.
Yeah, well, that's we didn't get to see many fancy people, though. So, you know, yeah, because they were all up in the Cloud City. And that's not till the second one, if we ever see it. Depends on this doing well. They certainly tried to cram in, as you were mentioning, a lot into this film. If there is another major complaint, this film is way overstuffed. And it, at points, feels it. Now, it's not, like, it doesn't really go over 2 hours, per se. It's not, like, to that point you're like, oh, for fuck's sakes. But you feel that 2 hours, and part of it is, there's a little bit of plot exhaustion, because it's just, okay, that's done, let's go to the next thing. Okay, now let's get to the next thing. Okay, now let's go to the next thing.
I felt like I was getting a little bit of a... Boy, this is going to be a loaded statement, but it was a little bit of Last Jedi syndrome where I felt like...
I'll kill you
right
now.
Oh, that wasn't... You love me. I felt a little bit like, oh
yeah,
boy,
but you hurt what
that
you
wasn't
love.
A... That wasn't the finale. Oh, okay. This is the finale. Oh, that's not the finale. Okay, this is a, that's not the finale. I don't know. I mean,
are you
again,
crying yet? No, it's not the finale.
I mean, it was. I felt like, yeah, it still felt functional. Like I was in my mind. I was comparing it to. And this is one of the problems with also leaving it as a leaving it kind of open ended, because. The problem is that when you end the story or you finish it or whatever, you run the risk of cramming way too much into it. Like there was a Devilman live action movie back in the early 2000s, and there's another Japanese live action joint, and that one is they do the whole kit and caboodle. They do the entire story of Devilman from. And they include the end of the world. If anybody knows anything about Devilman, is that the world always ends.
Not me.
And, well, whatever. Anyway, they, and in that movie, kind of sucks because it's like, oh, okay. Like, apparently at some point during the production, they just said, oh, we're not going to get a sequel. Fuck it. And just do the whole thing.
All 80 graphic novels.
All of it. Do all of it. And I just...
I don't know how many graphic novels there are.
There's a lot.
Okay.
And that's the thing that I'm kind of glad they didn't do. Like, even if this doesn't get a sequel, you know what? In my mind's eye, I can see where things are going. Already, you could go read the manga. And that, to me, I actually am okay with it kind of ending on, not so much a cliffhanger, just kind of like a moving forward towards the future, like I have my goal.
Here's your thing that if there is a sequel, it will be more focused on.
Yeah,
because it does largely wrap up the book of the story and the world, though,
Like, one of the things they do is they introduce so many concepts and make a big deal out of characters, and to the point that you feel like, it's like, oh, this is going to be critical to the climax of the... Nope, that character is never coming back.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, this guy, you're not seeing him again until we get a sequel, so I hope you like your one little view of him.
There's characters in the poster that are in the movie for, like... one scene.
Yeah, I know. I was saying same thing. Like, the smaller the characters get, because they're all on, like, sort of like a 90-degree triangle going down, and, like, you can see, like, as they get smaller, that's literally the less screen time they have, and you can you can map where characters die in the film by how small they are on the poster.
Yeah, when there was one actress who's been in a few things. I'm like, oh, I haven't seen her in very many things. Like, I'm curious to see her in this, and then... when it was apparent that she wasn't coming back, I'm like, oh, that was a bummer.
Well, but she did get taken out pretty cool, just saying.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to final thoughts. Harris, get started.
So this was one that I was not sure how I was going to feel about, because on the one hand, I love the manga, and there was an OVA that was based off of it that does the first graphic novel story, and it had art by Yukito Kishiro, who's one of my favorite character designers, and I was kind of like, on the one hand, I love the story. On the other hand, it's Robert Rodriguez. He's got two good movies in him, and I've seen them both. And everything after that has been more or less shit. I don't know how this is going to go. And I was impressed with how well it translated the manga, like, and how much it made things work. There is some clunkiness that is so much like, well, it's in the manga, we have to keep it in this, like, everyone referring to the bounty hunters as hunter warriors, which is directly from the manga. I was like, you could have called them bounty
hunters. Just clunky enough to had to be from the manga.
Yeah, you could have just called them bounty hunters. I really don't think anybody was going to fight you on that one. But hey, I appreciate your leaving it in. But the fact that they tried to do two graphic novels at once, that is the sort of thing that makes me feel like either like Cameron wanted to skip straight to Motorball, or he just didn't have enough faith in the strength and the emotional journey and arc of the first graphic novel, which I think was a mistake. I think he could have cut the entire Motorball scene entirely, not missed a damn thing, and had more room for some more emotional growth, which would have hit you like a gut punch at the end.
Yeah, but the Motorball scenes are some of the best scenes in the whole movie.
Oh, they're gorgeous! They're just kind of beyond the point of the plot of the movie, other than to set up the sequel. And the same thing with including certain characters who are just like, they're literally there just so that, like, hey, there's more going on, better like this movie so you can find out more what's going on. No, you could have left that off, and you could have just, like, dropped little clues in that people in the next movie, if there was one, could go, oh, that's what that means, instead of being, like, hammering the sequel bait with a hammer. So, all in all, what they did do, I was really impressed by. It had its obvious limitations because of hewing close to the manga to the point that the dialogue, kind of some of it came from the manga, and just, ouch. So I am going to have to give it 7 out of 10 plasma jet fingers.
JC? Nice.
My expectations of this one went up and down. Like, I've seen trailers for this movie since, like, November. And anytime you see a trailer for a movie that early, I'm always kind of iffy on it. And plus, the trailer's been beaten into my head like thousands of times. And then, you know, people in LA and New York have started to see this, and you're starting to get really positive buzz from this. And I'm like, well, maybe it will be good. And then there's the Robert Rodriguez thing, who, I mean, I'm always going to love Desperado. But beyond that, yeah, his filmography leaves a lot to be desired, which is also a bummer. So, yeah, I felt like my expectations were kind of high. They were mostly met. I didn't know that this was an existing graphic novel or a manga. And so I think for the general audience, which is mostly going to be people who see that, like, who are like me, didn't know that. I think it does the job in getting them interested in the world. I definitely liked the journey that I was on. I liked the visuals. I'm impressed by everything. I'm impressed by Rosa Salazar voicing Alita. So, yeah, overall, I think it did what it's supposed to do for the general audiences. I can see how somebody who's really familiar with the manga might have some issues with it. But no, I liked it. It's weird that it's a February release. I wish the studios knew, you know, more or less whether or not they had a good movie or not. Because this is something I feel like would have done, it'll probably still do well, but it would have done much better in like April. It was like maybe the first of the summer. There's
obviously
fringe.
Some amount of fear of like, fuck.
Yeah.
What audience? We don't want to compete against anything else.
I was
going to
say, there's a lot of shit coming out this year that people are like, no.
Yeah, there's just like, we got to get this out before Avengers drops. And, otherwise. Yeah.
And this is an uncertain property. So,
yeah. And so, you know, I think this will be interesting for studios to see in the future, like whether, you know, when they realize they have a good movie on their hands. But yeah, overall, I would probably give this maybe 8 out of 10 little fleas.
Okay, Matt Frank, nice. Who, you know what? I could have sworn would be played by an Asian dude, but go ahead.
And my eyes are just squinty enough where I do get that question when I go to Japan. They're like, Do you have Jeff? No, I don't. No, I don't. And I was like, okay. Anyway,
you got 2/3 of the one of us weeb crew.
One thing I will have to say right off the bat is really smart move to adapt a manga that's, you know, a couple of decades old as opposed to something recent. Because anytime a recent anime or manga gets adapted, it doesn't matter how good it is, it will be savaged and torn apart. This almost feels like something that they had the time. I mean, as we said, Cameron's been trying to get this made for a long time. So they've had the time to really sit and think about how to make this and how to adapt this and how do we work everything? How do we properly adapt this while sticking to the story and the things that make the story special? I really agree with Harris on a lot of his points. And that's speaking as someone who has not read the manga, but So as a result, I was actually kind of excited to see this. I mean, really, the only thing I took issue with and still kind of take issue with are those fucking eyes. But everything else, I was surprised at how much I liked it. And I was surprised at how well it all played. Again, as we said, there was a couple of things that I just kind of recoiled from, like a lot of this cringy romance stuff. And that was the thing that really started, where I really started thinking, like, oh my god, are they going for the YA audience? That's interesting.
I suspect they much were.
For this old manga? That's pretty interesting. But, you know what? Good on them for it. I really hope this does, I hope this does well, and I hope this kind of picks up some steam, because I'm a little worried about it. It feels like the buzz should be there, but it's not really there. So, you know, I recommend seeing it, definitely. I'm going to definitely tell people to go see it, too. I am going to give this a pretty solid 8 out of 10 normal-sized eyes.
You know, I think we're more or less on the same page with different degrees to how much we exactly enjoyed it, but we're all hovering around the same area here, that this is imperfect, but there's a lot of ways it really is kind of perfect. Like I said, it's just great world building, and it's visual marvel, and the effects are fantastic, and the action scenes are great. And I wouldn't even mind the romance stuff if they had just spent some time writing better dialogue for it. And I don't care if it was lifted straight from the manga. It translates as laughably silly and bad watching it on screen.
What? Was her romantic interest in the manga?
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
But, there's just points where it pulled me out of it. The third act kind of stumbles a bit, where there's a point where they're just trying to just shotgun blast a bunch of last minute exposition at you and make a bunch of stuff happen real fast. And it kind of, you get a little bit of plot exhaustion, but still, this is a lot of fun. I don't think there's but brief moments that I was like, I am not having fun right now. And the rest of the time I'm like, this is great. I would totally rewatch the shit out of, like, if nothing else, just a montage of the action sequences, of which there are a lot in this film. Just super cool. Hell, I could see buying action figures from this film, because these like cyborg things, they are cool. Yeah. They're really neat.
Man.
The Funko Pop is going to have huge eyes.
Yeah, right. I was going to say, I could see a like an 80s style or 90s style action figure line of like being able to swap out robot parts
for different
figures. I just Hasbro, call me.
I just love the fact that like Jack Earl Haley's character has fucking tribal tattoos on his cyborg bits too. That's a level of like commitment to douchebaggery that's kind of impressive.
And there are moments that like the CG as far as the characters, which includes the eyes to some point, and Jack Earl Haley, where there is that uncanny valley there, but there's something to be said as well for like it tends to be with these characters who are like with her, who is decidedly like she may have human parts, but to some degree she never really was. She is some other thing entirely. And Jackie Earle Haley, who has been so rebuilt 8 billion times that there's very little of them left recognizably human, that you're like, okay, it kind of makes sense that there would be, even if they were real, an uncanny valley upon looking at them and go like, you're human, but not. It's disturbing to look at you. So I'll give them points to the fact they at least realized that. I did like that they chose other ones who didn't have all fucked up, torn apart faces to just map the actual actor's face right onto it and don't fuck with it too much. And that actually came out pretty well. I do have mixed feelings once again, because there's all this is like, man, this was so close to being on some level a really great film. And as it is, it's a pretty darn good film. I'm going to give it 8 out of 10 times. I couldn't help but think to myself, man, there's going to be a lot of blowjobs in this relationship.
Yeah, that was something they touched on very briefly when so Alita asks Ito, like, is it possible for a human to love a cyborg? And the part that I wanted him to be like,
exercise love your jaw.
Love, yes. But he really better love pinchy hand jobs.